such an important role as the anchor economy of the East Africa region. Plus, Kenya has been crucial to keeping Somalia stable and al-Shabaab at bay. Uhuru Kenyatta has been mentioning al-Shabaab a lot in his speeches. So if he wins, these war crimes charges could, you know, literally dribble away. We'll see.
NPR's Gregory Warner speaking to us from Nairobi. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Renee.
Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, March 4th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. It's March, and brown bears will start emerging from their dens in the next couple of weeks with one thing in mind, food. KCAW's Ann Bryce talked with fish and game biologist Phil Mooney and has this report.
Last summer and fall, bears struggled to find enough berries and fish to eat. Some were out as late as December, trying to stock up on calories for their winter hibernation. When bears leave their dens, biologist Phil Mooney says they become eating machines.
There's really two things that drive bears, and it's sex and it's food. And it's that simple. And the breeding season is about the only time where it shifts to the urge to breed, and the rest of the time it's to get food because they have to stock up enough calories to get them through the hibernation period.
In their natural environment in early spring, bears subsist mainly on grasses and sedges, which Mooney calls a dry salad compared to the buffet of steak and seafood options available around humans.
If you just totaled up the number of calories you can get from the stuff we throw away as garbage versus a bear, especially this time of year coming out and trying to get that type of quality food, there's no comparison.
Human food waste is like a drug for bears. Once they know it's there and get used to having it around, it becomes really tough to keep them from coming back.
They're going to hit the can, and they're going to keep coming back to that can, even if you try to change your ways immediately and clean the thing out and bleach it and whatever. The bear's going to come back to that spot, and he's going to keep checking it until he finally tires out and goes someplace else.
Mooney says it's important that everyone properly disposes of garbage all year long. He says bear reports come in year-round, and it takes the whole neighborhood being diligent with their waste.
Have everybody on the street, say 9 out of 10 houses on a street, do it perfectly and have one person that doesn't want to do it. And the bear comes in that, and once they come into the area, they're going to check every single can.
Authorities recommend that people freeze any food and animal parts, put baby diapers in a separate sealed container, and make a trip to the transfer station on Jarvis Street. Everyone is allowed to dump up to 200 pounds of waste per month for free. If you can't make it to the transfer station, the next best thing is to wait and put smelly waste in the trash can the morning of garbage day. If you spot a bear and it's not a threat, Mooney says you should call the business line at the police station at 747-3245. He says they record the reports and use them to track bear activity in the area. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ann Bryce.
The lawsuit over allegedly defective engines for the state's fast ferries has come to an end. A settlement was announced Friday afternoon after nearly 3 years of litigation and just before the start of trial. State Attorney Dana Burke says the Alaska Marine Highway System will get 8 new engines provided by the German manufacturer MTU Friedrichshafen. There'll be an option for the state to purchase 2 spare engines at cost. Burke says the settlement also calls for a maintenance agreement and 5-new-year extended warranty on the new engines for the fast ferries Fairweather and Chinica.
We've built into this settlement agreement an improved, mutually beneficial working relationship that's going to allow these engines to continue to operate in ferry service from here on out. And it's not just a rhetorical flourish with respect to an agreement to do that. We have binding commitments that make us do that.
Value of the new engines was not immediately available, but Burke says MTU could deliver and install them for each of the ferries starting in the fall. Burke promised that the settlement agreement will be made public as soon as all parties sign off on it. This may happen as early as next week. Doug Serdaley is the Alaska attorney for MTU.
It has taken the parties and counsel working full-time nearly 3 weeks to develop this settlement agreement, and a lot of thought and effort has gone into it. And we both sides think it's a very fair and a very reasonable agreement for both sides.
Both Burke and Serdaley ask April's trial be vacated or taken off the calendar. The state's case against MTU will be dismissed while the state hopes to preserve its interests against Director Shipyard, the Connecticut builder of ferries, and other defendants in the case. That company is currently mired in bankruptcy court and is not currently part of the state's lawsuit. In the legislature, a bill that would increase funding for schools has been introduced. A team of nine Democrats want to peg what is called the base student allocation to inflation. That allocation gives schools $5,680 for every student they have enrolled, and it's remained at the same level for the past 3 years. The funding bill would increase that amount to nearly $6,000 to account for inflation over the past 2 years, and it would permanently tie the allocation to the Consumer Price Index going forward. Representative Harriet Drummond served on the Anchorage School Board before being elected to the legislature, and she describes the bill as a way of responding to recent staffing cuts in the district.
The school districts have been cutting for years. They've long since cut any fat, if there ever was any to begin with. They're now cutting certified staff.
House Majority Leader Lance Pruitt is skeptical of the bill's potential to get through the legislature. The Anchorage Republican is concerned the bill would give future legislators less flexibility with the budget in times when less revenue is coming in, and he says the changes to the education funding formula would probably have more success if the Democratic minority took a bipartisan approach.
The bill that's out there is more of a political statement than truly addressing the issue. If there was really a desire to see this move forward and not just be an opportunity to talk to you guys, then you would probably see some majority members' names on there.
Pruitt says that it's too early to tell whether there'll be any increase to education funding, but thinks the governor's plan to keep the base student allocation at the same level is a good starting point. A similar bill tied to the base student allocation to inflation was introduced in the last legislature, but stalled in committee. About 100 state workers held a rally outside the state office building in Juneau Thursday to show solidarity with union leaders negotiating new contracts. The Parnell administration is currently working out a new 3-year deals with three public employee unions, representing more than 11,000 workers statewide. At the same time, Republican legislators have come out against raises for those workers. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
What do we want?
With the portable sound system on the fritz, Gordon Wilson Naranjo took matters into his own hands, jumping on the railing of the state office building portico and leading union members in a chant.
When do we want it?
No! Yeah!
Wilson Naranjo is a wildlife biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and a member of the Alaska State Employees Association. With about 8,500 members, ASEA is the largest state employee union. Wilson Naranjo says he's disappointed the state isn't offering more of a wage adjustment to workers outside Anchorage.
Here in Juneau, we have a higher cost of living, property value, and there hasn't been that full adjustment. And so I'd like to see that geographic difference. That's my big thing.
According to a recent negotiation update on ASEA's website, the state's initial wage proposal did not include any pay increase in the first year of the contract and only 1% increases in years 2 and 3. The union countered with a proposed 3% increase in year 1 and 2% increases in subsequent years. Jim Duncan is ASEA's business manager.
Well, we still have a ways to go in negotiations. I think we're making progress.
Duncan says the two sides are mostly squabbling over monetary issues right now. The state backed off an earlier proposal to abolish the union's third-party managed health trust, which provides medical benefits to ASEA members and their dependents.
Which was a big issue for us, so they have decided to back off on that. But again, I'm optimistic. We're doing some hard bargaining. They're doing some hard bargaining. That's what the process is about.
Andy Mills, Special Assistant to Administration Commissioner Becky Holtberg, says the state wants balanced agreements for all of its union contracts.
That being one that both parties are happy with.
The state is also negotiating with two Alaska Public Employees Association bargaining units representing about 3,000 workers. APEA's Doug Swanson says talks are focused on wages and health benefits, but he declined to offer specifics, citing the positive state of negotiations.
When things aren't going well, I can complain to you. But when we're real close to being done and things are moving and there's positive momentum, there's not a whole lot I can say to the media or say to anybody, because we don't want to break the momentum.
By statute, the administration must submit labor agreements to the legislature by the 60th day of the session. That's March 15th this year. In an unusual move, legislative leaders are adding their 2 cents during negotiations. In a recent letter to Governor Sean Parnell, House Speaker Mike Chenault, Senate President Charlie Huggins, and the co-chairs of the House and Senate Finance Committees, all Republicans, urge the administration to, quote, hold the monetary terms of the contracts at zero. The letter cites the state's fiscal uncertainty, declining oil tax revenue, and perceived competition with the private sector. Duncan says ASEA isn't worried about lawmakers at this point.
The legislature has a right to express their opinion. I respect that. However, we negotiate with the administration, and once we reach an agreement, we'll then go present that to the legislature.
But the letter is a big concern to ASEA member Alan Plotnick, an employment security specialist with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Did the legislature get their raise? Did they get their cost of living allowance? Do they get their per diem? Do they get their offices remodeled? Yeah, they do. We're all Alaskans. Come on, let's keep the people that we have sustained with a livable income.
The legislature is not considering any bills to limit collective bargaining, and House and Senate leaders have said they have no plans to introduce such legislation this year. But with many states and the municipality of Anchorage acting to limit union members' rights, Plotnick is wary.
You look what happened in Wisconsin. We need to stick together. It's really scary.
Duncan says ASEA and the state have at least 2 more bargaining sessions before the March 15th statutory deadline for an agreement. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Now for Sitka's own weather. Expected to be a sunny day with highs around 44. Northeast wind 10 miles per hour. KCAW in Sitka.